And we do have a work session, but we're going to wait until we get a work session for DEQ grant request. We're going to wait till we get a quorum. So I'm going to open the public hearing for Senate Bill 5547, Watershed Enhancement Board.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jeff Huntington, the director of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. And we came today to prepare to pick up where we left off yesterday. If the chair is acceptable to the chair, what I thought I would do is make sure that sometime about mid-course today, make sure that I found a good stopping place and allowed the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program to be thoroughly heard and briefed with the committee so that you have as much time as you'd like to do that, since the Executive Director, Deb Marriott's down here from Portland today for that purpose. And that way I won't chew up all of her time, and then I'd be happy to continue in my presentation, if that's okay.
I'll leave it up to you, Jeff.
Okay, thank you.
I will break in as soon as I get a quorum and take care of the DEQ grant request.
I understand, Mr. Chair, and we're real flexible today. My goal is to move us through the grant program and the bulk of the business that we have with policy option packages and so forth today, and I think, frankly, we're in very good shape to be done before our time is up on Wednesday. So I wanted to pick up where we left off yesterday, which, frankly, was right at the point where we going through the responses to budget notes, which in our binder is at section 1.12, page 37. And we had an even dozen budget notes in the 0103 legislatively adopted budget for OWEB. We've responded to all of them, and in the binder there were some that were technical and more tracking, and I will point out just a few of them, and if you have questions on any, I'll be happy to talk about those as well. But rather than go through each one of the 12, I thought I'd just hit on a couple, three of them. The first one that I wanted to mention was one that we did talk a fair amount about, and it was the number one budget note on the top of page Global 37, and it was whether or not we were to look and see whether or not the additional payment to the Water Resources Department for our accounting services and human resources and so forth was the most cost-effective way for our agency to handle those functions and responsibilities. We did that, and the results were actually surprising to me, and that was that while we have in our base budget a little over $101,000 for those services to the Water Resources Department on a biennial basis, to put that in place in our agency and self-execute those functions would be around $350,000 a biennium. So it was a good lesson for us in terms of a small agency relying on some of the larger agencies for core functions. And I can tell you after the last couple of years, it's working very well. And there's no reason that we would seek to change that and add any additional FTE in the future to deal with payroll, accounting, human resources kind of functions for our agency. We had budget notes that also related to developing a grant program criteria for watershed council support, beginning to move watershed council support toward a more merit-based approach. It's the second budget note, and I'm noticing we didn't really number these dozen budget notes. It's note number two. OWEB will report on progress developing a grant program criteria for watershed council support that emphasizes the following principles. I'm prepared to do that now if I have a couple of handouts and I can fill you in on how we're working with Watershed Council support, or I can, Mr. Chair, do that when we get to the portion in our budget that deals with continuing support for Watershed Councils, whichever you would prefer.
Let's do it when we do the support.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a budget note that is halfway down on page 38, Global 38, talking about it's the second one up from the bottom. Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board is directed to continue the development of a cost-share program that provides funds to landowners installing projects in accordance with local area agricultural water quality management plans. In the last legislative session, we were in the middle of working through new administrative rules to create a small grant program. We finished those rules after the session, worked a long time with the Rules Advisory Committee. This is the budget note is related to that. I can report to you today that we're feeling very good about this new small grant program. Essentially, what we did was try to create a structure where, in by geographic area, the watershed councils and the districts in a particular area would go together, determine what their local priorities were for a small grant program. The OWEB board would allocate a block of money to that area, and we did it in increments of $100,000 per area, 28 different areas. And once the local group had established the priorities of how they wanted the money to go to support Senate Bill 1010 and TMDL development and other local restoration priorities, they would get the go-ahead to accept a streamlined grant application for grants $10,000 or less, and to turn those grant applications around in very quick turnaround time and make the money available to landowners. And the program is lifted off. We now have those partnerships established in every one of the 28 areas in the state, and we have allocated $2.8 million for the biennium, and that's over half spent. And we are getting good feedback on the program from different parts of the state, and recognizing that we are going to pick up and review the program later this year, see if we can create some more efficiencies and some more incentives. But frankly, it's as it has rolled out, it has rolled out rather smoothly, and we're feeling like it is a significant addition to the grant program. That portion then of small dollar projects is now being handled for OWEB through the small grant program, largely without having my OWEB board go through a full application review process on small grants, and that was one of the objectives of that program as well. The bottom budget note on page 38 also deals with the Conservation Hatchery Improvement Program. This is one that a budget note that was put in with a lot of discussion with Representative Morgan and Senator Dukes in the last session. We did spend a lot of time working through that program with ODFW and with members of the task force. And I believe that Senator Dukes even appeared in front of the OWEB board and talked to the board at length about project proposals. In the end, we have we did all of the peer review that was expected by the legislature on the list of project proposals you see there. And OWEB began the process of funding the Nonpareil Dam project, which we paid for some collection of eggs and fish rearing for the genetic portion of that project, and provided funds to move that project through to the end of this biennium. And in the governor's revised budget, I did make sure that the governor's revised budget has funding for continuation of that as part of the federal fund allocation that is in the governor's revised budget, although it did not appear in the governor's base budget, that document that was prepared. I think that's... And I would be happy to come back to that one if Senator Dukes has some questions when she's in the room, but that's the essence of that. We did follow the peer review, and out of the peer review and in working with ODFW, out of the five projects that were on the budget note list, only the Nonpareil Dam was the one that there was advocacy to move forward with, and so that's the one that the board did go forward with. I believe the others are still on the table in one way or another being considered by folks, but I'm not sure the status of them. We funded the Willamette Toxics study and worked closely with Oregon State University to do that. And that an initial report was provided to the Emergency Board in December, and we are waiting for the last year of data on that report. And that will increase the state's ability to explain the higher occurrence of skeletal deformities in juvenile fish. That was a fairly significant budget note that had a lot of discussion in the last legislative session relative to OWEB's role and participation in it. which essentially amounted to us working with the university to scope and frame a request for proposal to make sure that the research that's being done answers a very pertinent policy question that would be that DEQ and the university and this legislature and others could look at and have feel as though we've advanced ourselves, our knowledge and understanding of what's going on in the Newburgh Pool and the Willamette. Some measure as a result of the dollars that were spent.
Jeff, what's the bottom line? Have they found the source of the problem?
The first year of data was noting a higher occurrence of the skeletal deformities, but it was but the essence of what I heard Dr. Curtis testify to in front of the emergency board was that he had to see the second year of data in order to begin to see whether there were any trends saying it was natural or other causes. And if Jane Nicholas were here, he could probably fill you in more on precisely what that was, what it was that was said. I'll ask him tonight, and perhaps he can talk to you a little bit about it tomorrow. Global page 41, 1.13, is our agency program prioritization. This was something that was requested as part of the budget.
Could we take a break now and take care of the DEQ proposal? I'm afraid I'm
going to... ask the co-chair for a moment of his time on the DEQ piece.
Okay.
And he's almost down here, but not quite.
Okay. Go ahead then.
Global page 41, then, is our priority listing by program for my agency. And any funding reduction targets for the 0305 biennium would be accomplished in the context of these priorities. We have gone through and identified individual reductions, and I will say that on some level, individual reductions in increments would occur in a way that was consistent with this program priority listing, but there would be a little bit of the thinning the soup, if you will, across the different programs before we would begin absolute elimination from in the order that you have in this page. It probably no surprise the top priority for OWEB is being able to run a grants program, and the top priority for the grants program essentially is the fiscal management of open grants and the administration of the open grant portfolio, and then to the extent that there is money available in future budgets to be awarding new grants, the capacity to do the review and the technical merit review and the awarding process and entering into grant agreements is the top priority for our agency. Maintaining support for councils was the second priority for our agency's list, and that is on the theory that we have the capacity of a local delivery system to work with landowners in the state, and OWEB's portion of that is the Watershed Council's, Department of Agriculture's portion of funding support of districts, and we felt that it was very important to place that support as a high priority to continue in order to have the Oregon Plan move forward. Oregon Plan programs are the next program priority for us with monitoring, reporting, and the information systems, and you can see the FTE that are allocated to those in the governor's balanced budget. That is a net reduction of 2 FTE from the 0103 budget for OWEB, but the 2 FTE come out of the Oregon Plan programs. There was an additional FTE that is now vacant in the monitoring program, and in addition to the one that you see there. And the information systems program has 1 FTE in the current biennium, and under the governor's balanced budget has 0 FTE. And we'll be talking about that later today, I hope, because we have an alternative that would help us preserve that program at the same revenue level, revenue reduction level that is in the governor's balance budget. And I believe Lisa mentioned that as a technical adjustment to OWEB's budget in her presentation. Agency administration then falls where you see it, and that is my position, the board support position, and a utility infielder that handles everything that comes along for the agency on policy matters, supporting the board, doing a whole lot of answering questions for constituents and moving rules and all the other things that come along with running an agency, and that's what is comprised in agency administration. One point I want to make is that, again, we're the vessel that carries the budget for IMST and the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program at the dollar figures you see. I did not prioritize those because they are not programs that I'm responsible for, and I felt that the prioritization of where those fall in the budget reductions or augmentation is a policy call that that this body and the governor need to talk about, and I'll be happy to administer those programs in the way that I'm given them as part of my legislatively adopted budget. IMST, the $211,661 figure is a reduction of Measure 66 funds down from $188,339 in the this biennium. So the governor's balanced budget did have a reduction in funding for the IMST. It's important to note there, and we'll talk about it tomorrow, that the IMST budget has historically been a $400,000 allocation of Measure 66 money and a $500,000 grant from the OWEB board out of federal funds for a operating budget of about $900,000. So the reduction you see there is on the Measure 66 side of the ledger. And the IMST discussion talks about the program impacts of that, and I think Stan Gregory will be here tomorrow to talk to you about that. There is a reduction in the LCREP budget as well. It's about a $12,000 reduction in the governor's balanced budget, and the governor's revised budget moves all of the general fund money from LCREP onto the Measure 66 ledger, and that'll be discussed later today.
Okay. Any questions so far?
Now, Mr. Chair, the grant program is the next portion of our budget, and as I mentioned yesterday, we segregate the grant program budget packages from those associated with operation of the agency. And I have the grant program section summarized in two parts. One, just a view of what the budget for the grant program looked like in the 01-03 biennium, and then the 03-05 section begins on 2.2 at Global 52. That it's the latter section that has all the various packages for fund expenditure limitation. I'm not going to go through it, but I wanted you to see how we keep track of funding as an agency. The first chart really takes a look at the different funding sources in 2001, 2003, and the final column all the way over to the right is the starting point that my board works with when it looks at the expenditures that are the money that's available for its grant program administration. Page 43 is a great example of the complicated results from five special sessions and what we all worked on last spring. This is what my fiscal manager, Cindy Cry, does to keep track of the Measure 66 money with LFO staff and Department of Administrative Services staff. They do this type of work and try to reconcile so that everyone agrees on the numbers whenever we have changes in midstream. And as you can see, we had a number of them in the last biennium. The next page, page 44, is the key working document that my board and I work from over a two-year budget period. This is the spreadsheet that we use to keep track of every fund source that we have expenditure limitation for. And as you can see along the top, each grant cycle is identified individually with the number of applications, the amount of funds requested, the grants approved, the funds awarded, and non-grants that are awarded, and we track that by fund source, and we set targets on a meeting-by-meeting basis that spreads the money equally over a biennium so that we don't end up in a position where we've over-allocated early in the two-year cycle only to not have enough money to fund grants that come in the latter portion of biennium. And I'll be happy to answer questions about that individually or from the committee as you have them. But I did want you just to take a look at how we track. Probably more interesting is 45 and 46, just a roll-up, and so you can see how the money was allocated across the state in the last biennium and by types of projects. We track all of the grants according to two big categories, capacity grants, and that's grants that help us support councils, monitoring and data collection, education, watershed assessments, and planning, prioritizing projects, technical assistance kind of things. Restoration category are on-the-ground projects, and we track those by 11 different categories of projects. We've listed for the capital funds on page 46 those 11, and you can get a sense of the percentage that we spent on each of the 11 categories. Just a rough percentage of how those monies in the last biennium were spent by the OWEB board, with the caution that projects have generally more than one impact on more than one category. So you can have a stream enhancement project that also has a fish passage improvement component, and our tracking system really only assigns one kind of value to each grant. And it's here I wanted to bring up acquisitions and talk to you a little bit about that. I know that there's interest on the committee, and we brought some additional material so you could see the types of grants that we had awarded to accomplish acquisitions. As you can see on page 46, we spent about 4.8% of our funds in the last biennium on acquisitions of interest in land and in water. The only water right acquisitions we did were single year leases of water rights in the drought season of 2001, and it was a very small amount of money that I can't tell you off the top of my head, but I could get for you in just a moment. The acquisitions of interest in land was by far the majority of that 4% of the money that we spent. And I have some handouts that I'll offer the committee so you can look behind that 4.8% and see exactly how we've managed the program for capital funds from Measure 66 for acquisitions.
Jeff, was there any purchase of conservation rights?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, did you ask me if there was purchase of conservation easements?
Yes.
That was the question. I think we had applications for conservation easements, but in the end, for various reasons, we didn't fund a conservation easement. And I believe right now we have two, in the current grant cycle, we actually have two conservation easements pending. And I can tell you only that, just going on my recollection, that we had appraisal issues that were associated with some of the conservation easements, where there was a real question about whether or not the value of the easement was substantially less than the fee simple title value of the property, and that was something that was difficult to work out. And we are doing some work to come up with a methodology for valuing conservation easements associated with the CREP, the CREP program now, but the status of the two that are pending, I'm not certain of. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I've put in front of you three documents. One is a two-sided sheet that is a brief description of each of the acquisitions that we've funded from Measure 66. The other is some question and answer facts about acquisition grants, and the third is just a quick look at each of the grants with respect to whether or not there was agricultural land in production at issue, whether the status of the taxes as a result of the grant, and who the ultimate title holder is. OWEB received 32 applications since the program began, since OWEB became an agency 3 years ago. We have awarded 10 acquisition grants, and those are outlined on that first handout for you, and you can see the name of the project and the matching funds that went into it. In the 2001-03 biennium, about 1% of all the monies we spent went toward acquisition. I'm sorry, about 1% of the projects that we funded were acquisition projects. And as I said earlier, about 4.8%. The total projects funded were a little over 1,300 acres in the last in this biennium, with substantial portion of that being one that an acquisition we just completed in the Deschutes on the Metolius Preserve that was over 1,000 acres. And that was a large acquisition for us and a very strong application with a lot of local support. When we are considering an acquisition application, there are three basic criteria that our review runs through. One is, what's the ecological benefit of the acquisition? In particular, what's the ecological benefit that is accrued as a result of acquiring the land as opposed to having it continued to be managed with a current regulatory baseline in place? The second is what I call a due diligence examination. Every application that comes in the door at OWEB has to have a full-blown appraisal on the fair market value of the parcel, and then my board hires an independent appraiser to work for the board to review all of the due diligence materials that are submitted by the applicant. And frankly, that is where a large number of the 32 that came in the door that I guess the 22 that didn't get funded out of 32, that's where a large number of them we had hang-ups was on due diligent work and disagreement with us about appraised value. And then the third component of every application is local support and the extent of community involvement and local support for the particular application that's pending. And I can tell you that as of today, we have yet to fund an acquisition through the OWEB board that has had opposition by a local county government. And that is a significant piece of our rules. There is in the rules not a veto of projects, but we have, as a board, spent a great deal of time talking about what's the local support.
Jeff, if you don't mind, I think we're ready to run our DQ bill.
Okay. So
let me recess the Senate Bill 5547 public hearing and open the public hearing for the Department of Environmental Quality grant request. Mr. Schubert.
Mr. Chair, before you, have a request from the Department of Environmental Quality to approve the submission of a federal grant application to the Environmental Protection Agency for $100,000 to implement voluntary air toxics reductions efforts. I'd like to note for the record that the department's letter came in well in advance of the 10-day notification period of when the application was due, and we would have worked this application last week and gotten it to full for approval before the application submission deadline, but last Friday was an in-district day, we had no full committee and had no ability to get the request to full before the application was due.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Andy Ginsberg. I'm the Air Quality Administrator at DEQ. And as Mr. Siebert said, I'm here to request permission to apply for a federal grant from the United States Environmental Protection Agency. The purpose of this grant is to fund voluntary emission reduction measures for air toxics in Oregon, including seed funding for several voluntary pilot projects. In essence, we would pass on a portion of the grant to individual businesses to conduct voluntary emission reductions at their own facilities. The application, as Mr. Siebert mentioned, is due on April 30th. It would be for $100,000. It does not require any state match or any in-kind match, and we would implement this with existing staff. We think this type of voluntary emission reduction measure is important because it helps reduce public concern about air toxics, and that in turn helps us speed permitting because we're making progress on voluntary reductions in toxic air pollutants. If approved, we would begin work on this summer and complete it during the 2003-05 biennium. Be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the committee. Representative Morgan.
If you do receive the grants and you get finished with the pilot projects, what happens at that point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, we would, at the end of the project, towards the end of the next biennium, we'll go back and evaluate the pilots to see whether they achieved their goals, what types of emission reductions, whether they were practical to implement. And if so, then we would provide that information to similar sources and similar businesses so that that type of activity could possibly be replicated.
Follow-up?
So at that point, you've got, you know, hopefully some ideas that worked. But you have no more funding. What happens then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, we would hope to actually have more funding. This type of grant program is something that EPA is building, and so if future grants are available, we would request additional funding. But the idea of the pilot would be to evaluate whether these things are economic in and of themselves. In some cases, if a business replaces, say, a solvent with a water-based solvent, that in some cases can actually save money because they reduce material costs and hazardous waste disposal costs and so forth. So the pilot would evaluate that type of information, and we can make that available to other businesses.
And Mr. Chairman, a follow-up. I'm correct in I thought I read in here that this doesn't indebt us to any kind of match in the future.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, that's correct.
Thank you.
You see segments of the industry doing this kind of experimentation on their own?
Mr. Chair, yes, I do. There have been similar projects done in other places. Cleveland is the most notable example where, with the help of federal grants, this type of project has been done. They've been very popular with the business community, and they've actually forged some partnerships in some cases between adversaries citizen activists and businesses that have formerly been arm wrestling over emissions, got together and did some very positive projects.
I guess what I'm interested in is that I thought I heard you say that in some cases you expect to find that some of these practices might be cost effective. If they are cost effective, do you expect industry to do this without any financial support?
Mr. Chair, that would be our hope. In a lot of cases, having an example in Oregon where businesses tried a certain practice that we can point to helps other businesses make a similar commitment. But it would be strictly voluntary, and it would be based on just providing the information and hopefully future incentives.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I'm going to weigh in.
We're through with questions at this point. Did you have a report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the subcommittee. My name is Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services. We recommend that the subcommittee approve the request.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Legislative Fiscal also recommends approval of the request.
I think I'm ready for a motion.
Oh, I have a question this time, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dukes.
Usually we're yelling at state agencies because they don't get these things in soon enough. And fair is fair. Now we should be yelling not at Paul because Paul did his job. Legislators above him didn't do their job. And now we're sitting here with a deadline of tomorrow. And I guess I'm wondering, between all of you, we approve it today. It goes to full committee, I don't know whenever they get around to another full committee, which could be Friday. Are we all feeling comfortable that if the subcommittee approves it, Nellifall and Bannon approve it, is this application going to go in on time? And I'm assuming you fax it. I just want to know. I mean, when they hold it up, we can yell at them a lot
and do
something with their next application. But when we hold it up, we could kill this inadvertently. So I'm just...
Senator Dukes, I think the assumption would be that the department would go ahead and make the application on Wednesday. If the full committee were not to approve the application, the department would be put in the position of having to let the EPA know that they were pulling back their application and that the state had decided they did not want the $100,000.
That's fair, and that's what I was hoping for, Mr. Chair. I just wanted it on the record that this agency can go ahead after we approve, so if we approve this, and apply for this thing and not let us get in their way.
I think your points will take in, Senator, and we should have that discussion with our co-chairs.
Mr. Chair, that being said, I would move the LFO recommendation to approve the submission of the federal grant request to the EPA by the DEQ to full ways and means with a due pass recommendation.
You heard the motion. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Motion passes. Representative Johnson, would you like to carry that?
Yes, sir.
With that, we'll close the public hearing and work session. and reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 5547.
Jeff Huntington, Director of Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, for the record. Mr. Chair, while I when I sat down, staff did remind me that in response to your question about conservation easements, the board has voted to fund two conservation easements in the last 2 years, and both of those projects were withdrawn after the vote for one reason or another that wasn't really related to the OWEB process. And then we had discussed one other conservation easement application, but that grant applicant was awarded County Title III money prior to OWEB acting on it, and so that application was withdrawn without board action. So we have had a fair amount of process work on conservation easements thus far. Last point that I wanted to raise with the committee with respect to acquisitions in the OWEB Measure 66 program was the legislation that passed in the last session relating to what was generally referred to as the no-profit rule. And I worked with Representative Krupp on that bill, and we had a little bit of rulemaking to do as part of implementing that, and we have done the rulemaking. The board's expected to adopt the rules in this May, in fact, but we have been implementing the no-profit statute on all of our grants thus far, and essentially what that means is that if OWEB has a role in funding an acquisition, we take a deed restriction on title to the property that ensures that the purposes underlying the investment of Measure 66 dollars are maintained for the life of the management of the property, and that if there is ever a subsequent transfer of title, the OWEB board, any title search will indicate that it will not be a valid transfer of title unless the OWEB board votes to authorize the change in ownership. And as part of that, there is a consideration about whether or not there's a profit made on the transfer and the return of state funds, if there is. And that has been worked through Rules Advisory Committee, and we're implementing it. And as I said, the rules will be in place next month, I think on the 16th. That's the essence of the overview I wanted to offer on the acquisition program. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to talk more about it.
Any questions?
I have one.
Representative Morgan.
On a couple of these land acquisitions, it was the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department that ended up with the land. And given that they have the same amount of money coming out of Measure 66 that you do, I guess the question is, why are OWEB funds being used for this rather than their side of the Measure 66 funds if they're going to be ending up in the Oregon Park system?
Chair Messley, Representative Morgan, we have worked twice with the Parks Department, and the reason we have gone jointly in together has been because there's a substantial habitat component to those two particular acquisitions, and I'll use Whalen Island as an example. OWEB joined Parks Department in that acquisition in part because there is a substantial estuary component that the park title will hold, and we negotiated a management plan for that new state park that includes very clear protection of the salt marsh area and the way the public will interact with portions of that new state park in the context of protecting it for salmon refuge. And so we in fact took the same title restrictions on that transfer of title that we do on others. So where we have worked with Parks Department, it has been because there's been an opportunity to first accomplish the acquisition for dual purposes, and second, make sure that the long-term management of the facility is compatible for both purposes that are underlying the investment. And we do have very different criteria for moving forward an expenditure of the Measure 66 dollars between the Parks Department and OWEB on the purpose for the dollars being invested.
Follow up? Okay. Any other questions? Jeff, on the question, the facts sheet you have, question number six, where there's been no agricultural land taken out of production. I thought you folks participated in the Coos County project. for dairy, and that land was taken out of production.
Senator Mesley, this is the fact sheet on the Measure 66 current grant program. There was a federal fund grant that was applied for by GWEB that was provided as a block grant with grant fund conditions on it at, I believe it was the very first OWEB meeting that came up, and the federal funds award came through. And that grant was prior to any of the Measure 66 rules being put in place, and there was some agricultural land that was taken out of production by the grant recipient in that case. OWEB acted as the pass-through for administering it, and that was one that I know you and I have had discussions about that is not part of the acquisition program that we have now, and I apologize, we should have put it on there as a standalone. That kind of acquisition could not go forward under our current program rules that the board adopted to run the Measure 66 program, and would not go forward at all today. Wouldn't be eligible to be administered that way. And the biggest difference is that we now have the particulars of every acquisition, every parcel that is being considered, reviewed and considered by our grant process and by the board. And we don't have a pass-through of funds for an undesignated future purchase. And that was what distinguishes that application that was made by GWEB.
And I understand that. I just was clarifying from my own mind the accuracy. The title of this page is OWEB Acquisitions. Are you saying that this is only speaking about Measure 66 funds?
Mr. Chair, we have not used any other funds for acquisition since OWEB became an agency, with the exception of that pass-through grant that we talked about just a minute ago. And each time we have had federal fund limitation, we've talked about the limiting the acceptance of the federal money so that it would not be used for acquisitions, and very comfortable with that. If we were to use any other fund source, it would be subject to the same administrative rules that govern the Measure 66.
Good. I appreciate your clarifying that. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Morgan.
In some of the cases, the land was already owned by public entities. So I'm curious, just for example, take the first one on the list, which is a piece that appears to have been owned by Tillamook County that became part of a state park. If I would assume that because this is an estuary, that the county probably had no plans to develop the parcel. So what I'm curious about here is why this was a change of ownership here, and what the net benefit was other than moving some money from the state fund to the county.
Chair Mesley, Representative Morgan, actually the Wayland Island acquisition was from a private landholder, but because of the way this is the grantee and who received the money, and we worked with the county and the Parks Department, and title moved from the private landholder to the county and then is being moved to the state parks, but the grant applicant
was
the county.
Are they all private holdings?
We have purchased some property from out of public ownership with counties. They are counties or local government, and they are eligible applicants under our statute to apply for a grant. When we receive a grant, we're not so much concerned about who the owner is, but rather what is the ecological benefit of acquiring the property and moving it out of its current use or having restrictions placed on its future development. And what are the ecological benefits that accrue from that, and what is the fair market value that attaches to that? And I read into your question, at least implied, is if there is not a chance that a particular piece is going to be developed or used in a way that is contrary to fish habitat or water quality concerns, then would we acquire it? And essentially, that's the very first question we ask as we're going through our review process, is what is the basis for moving this into, for acquiring title and moving it into the acquisition program, as opposed to watching it in its current managed state by the current landowner. And that includes looking at what it is zoned at, what's the potential developable use of the property, and what is the fair market value based on the developable use, whether it's in public ownership currently or it's in private ownership. And generally that question is the same, whether it's in public ownership or private ownership, in the experience that we've had with the applications that have come in the door. In other words, a county could use it for similar purposes as to private individual, or sell it for development or whatever based on the current zoning.
Hello? Okay. I'd like to pursue that a little bit. So in regards to land that's publicly owned, particularly when the public agency controls the zoning of that property, do you have policies that the board has established that govern that? Because potentially I can see a local government increasing the density of the zoning and then turning around and wanting to sell the property to generate cash flow.
Mr. Chair, we don't have policies written on that. It is something that would certainly be uncovered as part of a review of the application, because the due diligence would look at what past zoning had been and changes to the developable use. And I can tell you that we haven't come across anything that has even sniffed like that. But we have not set up a rule that would preclude as an automatic trigger considering something like that. I was just handed a note that said we've had one acquisition purchase from a public entity, and it was the Williams Creek property that's listed on yours as number 10 on the spreadsheet. And that was the 30 acres, and it was from Josephine County, which was historically used for gravel mining and was eligible for that continued use.
Well, Mr. Chair, then I don't know the background, given that we have, you know, three lines of description here, but if there is a piece of property in the floodplain that can't be used because of ESA restrictions, what's the net benefit to the property of changing the ownership?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I'm going to call one of my staff people that has spent time on that particular project helping me through the evaluation. Frequently, it is because of restoration work that can be conducted on the property that wouldn't otherwise be conducted by the landowner, or by simply securing it away from having the permit fight that will occur with an attempt to develop it and move forward with fill and removal laws or whatever. And perhaps Allison Hensley's here, and she can maybe talk to you a little bit about what some of the particulars were of the Williams Creek.
Chair Meserle, members of the committee.
Okay.
Can you hear me? The Williams Creek property was owned by Josephine County, who used it for gravel extraction, and because of difficulties getting continuing permits for that because of the presence of salmon, decided to sell it. And had discussions with the Southern Oregon Land Conservancy and various other buyers about selling it, and found the best fit with the Southern Oregon Land Conservancy, who planned to restore the property to improve the salmon habitat and also use it for education with local schools, to lead tours, to have public access. So owning the property, having a land trust own the property, allows both restoration and education on the property, whereas if the county had continued to own it, that wouldn't be possible because the county didn't have the resources for that or the inclination.
And I guess I would add that one of the things we found is it's reflected in the appraised value of the property, that ESA constraints on development generally mean that you can move forward with development, or you can continue to apply for permits and try to work through the permitting process to have development occur under conditions that are difficult to get in place or difficult to comply with over time. And to the extent that they are more difficult, the appraised value reflects the likelihood of that being developed. And so the price that is considered fair market value comes down. And that is that's one of the considerations, obviously, in whether or not it's ultimately developable. But as long as there is a fair market value to the property, then there is some potential for it to be used in a manner that is or isn't consistent with salmon habitat, an example of Williams Creek. And I frankly think that's what was at issue there, is whether or not they wanted to move forward and continue to try and use the property for historical purposes, or to give up on doing that and put their resources in another place that was a more sustainable way of having gravel production for the county.
I would still submit that it doesn't seem to me that there's any reason why Josephine County couldn't have come to OWEB and requested grant funds to do the habitat restoration on the property themselves. And I mean, I don't think that it is a realistic argument to say that it was necessary for the title of the property to change hands for the restoration to take place on the property.
Chair Mesley, Representative Morgan, we've exhausted my recollection of that particular application out of the 32 we've worked through, and I'll be happy to bring back what the staff report was to the board and the full write-up on the ecological benefits and what the regional review team saw as they were looking at this property and the application, and talk more about it with you individually or as a committee. I understand your question and your point, and I don't know if I'll be able to resolve it directly, but I can certainly try to provide a little bit more information.
Let me go a little further. My math tells me that's $3,400 an acre. On what basis was property left that value? And maybe you need to get back to me with that.
Chair Mesley, my math says it's about $2,000 an acre. For $60,000 purchase price of 30 acres, I believe is, and I'm not sure if that's the same figures that are on your sheet, but
well,
it probably
I added two together. Maybe
okay. Yeah, the total purchase price is the grant. And we can give you the particulars. We have the underlying appraisal and the review appraiser, independent review appraisal for each of these. When we do a fair market valuation of the property, particularly one of the things we look for in our independent review appraiser is what were the comparables that were used by the original appraisal, and were they including other types of acquisitions that were for conservation easements? And we screen those out and look for comparables that are for production of the property in production, or similar properties in production as the comparables. So where the review appraisal is done and the full-blown appraisal, we've tried very hard to make sure we don't have artificially inflated values based on land being taken out of production that kind of bootstraps one acquisition on top of another. And frankly, that's one of the rubbing points or sticking points our program has with a number of the land trusts is the standard of the industry for other private foundations. They're not quite as concerned about that, and we don't go there. And so that's one of the reasons you see that we've only done 10 out of 32, and several of those have failed on the due diligence portion of this. It's because of the tightness of our criteria for our review appraisal.
It would seem to me that if it was no longer feasible to operate because of the Endangered Species Act to operate the rock pad, that would have no value for that usage. And so if you could find information on the basis that was appraised, that would be interesting.
We will give you that and the review of the potential use of the property that was completed as part of the review team ecological benefits analysis.
It would be interesting, I think, Mr. Chair, to know the zoning, and given that it is in the floodplain, the development restrictions that would be on it because of the zoning and the floodplain.
We'd probably get the entire report. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for being patient.
No problem. in looking at some of these projects and reflecting on the exchange that you just had with Representative Morgan about why a public owner like a county might want to divest themselves of property so that restoration could go on. In looking at some of these, and I have a limited knowledge, but I'm aware that an army of volunteers periodically participate in active restoration efforts. Would it be safe to say that part of your consideration might be the allowance of volunteers where a county might be concerned about liability and a land trust might have a layer of insulation that a public body wouldn't have?
Chair Mesley, Representative Johnson, I do think that it is very true to say that what we find is that the management goals and the way that the way those goals are going to be achieved can be very different between a county infrastructure and a land trust, and with a land trust or a parks department or the entity that's receiving our grant looking at a long-term management plan, they have the capacity to implement it in a very different way than the county either can or is interested in. And I do think that that's also a consideration as part of moving forward with some of these, and certainly some of the motivation for a public entity to want to divest itself of a particular piece of property because of their capacity to manage over the long term or desire to manage over the long term in a way that's consistent with the Measure 66 purposes and protecting the property for salmon habitat or water quality or fish and wildlife.
Any other questions? Thank you.
That was the next several pages in the book from page 48, 49, 50. Just look at the different set of brief few lines on the different fund sources and the way they looked in 2001 through 2003. The only one I want to call your attention to is research funds, and that's on global page 49. We have identified the use of the research funds in the last biennium from Measure 66 account that we're charged with administering, and then on the bottom of the page is an estimate of funds that will be available as of July 1, 2003. And I call it to your attention in part because we have we have the constraint based on Attorney General's opinions that the research account, it must be divided 65% to capital expenditure eligible items and 35% to non-capital expense eligible items. And with that, I'm ready to talk about our option packages for the coming year as part of the coming biennium as part of the governor's balanced budget.
Under the research fund awards, I was curious about a particular award.
Go ahead.
The Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission says for IMST research facilitation. What the heck was that? I see we didn't fund much of it, but.
Senator Mesley, Chair Mesley, Senator Dukes, the IMST helped work through an extensive process to come up with a prioritized list of research needs, information needs that merit investment by OWEB or the state in research that could be conducted to advance Oregon Plan implementation. And we ran a process that included, I believe, polling and working with, almost 100 different entities in the state, tribes, councils, districts, university. There was work done to try and ferret out legislative initiatives that were looking for research, all the agencies, and put that together in a package so the IMST could use that along with what they had been doing to prioritize what the information needs were. And so the facilitated process, it was about a $2,000 assistance to help them through that. I'm not exactly sure, and I have no recollection about why the initial amount was set at $13,000. But as you can see, $2,300 was spent to come up with that research prioritization list. And I've briefed substantive committees on that, and I have a copy of it for this committee if you're interested in looking at it this week. But that's what that expenditure was for.
Representative Krieger.
Sure, Mr. Jeff, last session, did we give some money to that Willamette River Talks and Study, or was that some other funds that we had? that Mayee or somebody had a bill or something. I can't remember. Was something.
Chair Messerly, Representative Krieger, the answer to your question is yes. Measure 66 research funds were used for that. $500,000 out of the operating side of the ledger were used for that, and that's the report that came back to the emergency board in preliminary form in December. And while you were considering the DEQ matter, staff told me that the initial results, Senator Messerly, you asked me what the bottom line on the initial results were. Staff informed me that some of the initial conclusions that Dr. Curtis, who's doing that research, has reached is that the fish deformities in the Willamette may likely or possibly be the result of a parasite as opposed to other source of toxicity levels and that may have been suspected by others. And so we're waiting for the second year of data to be completed this field season, and we'll have the full report wrapped up.
That was the point I was getting at, is what you volunteered. Where are we on the study? You've told us that, so that was kind of where I was going. Okay, thank you.
And I think, Representative, you see that on page 49, number 3, speaks specifically to that matter.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair. We discussed earlier, if it's all right with you, this might be a convenient stopping point for me to break to allow you to have as much time as you want to discuss the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program, which I'd be happy to do here. My next step is to start with the packages for the 0305 biennium.
Okay. No, that's fine.
Where's that located?
On the John Day.
Yeah, probably have two votes, right?
I think we probably want the other votes every more than two.
Mr. Chairman, the Lower Columbia is always been what some people consider the Lower Columbia.
Yeah, sure.
It's way too broad a title.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Chair Nessel, members of the Joint Legislative Ways and Means Natural Resources Committee, a name that's longer than my program name. My name is Deborah Marriott, and I am the Executive Director of the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership. I'm really pleased to be here this afternoon to walk you through what the Estuary Partnership is requesting from the state of Oregon for the upcoming biennium. I think many of you know about us, but I wanted to take just a couple of minutes to give you a little bit of history. The Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership is one of 28 programs in the National Estuary Program. It was established by Congress in 1987 to provide resources, both technical and financial, to local communities to assess rivers, estuaries of national significance, and to work together as a local community to decide what the issues were and then what, as a local community, we wanted to do about those problems. We became part of the National Estuary Program in 1995. We are one of the few two-state National Estuary Programs. We were developed as a two-state program, as I like to say, to try to erase the political boundary that we tend to want to draw down the middle of the Columbia River and to start working together in a watershed approach to address the issues in the lower river. We became part of the National Estuary Program in 1995. In looking back, it's hard to believe, but one of the justifications for us becoming a National Estuary Program was there was very little focus on the lower 146 miles of the Columbia River. Now, of course, with the listing of 12 threatened and endangered species, there's a lot of attention on the lower river. We'd like to claim credit for all that attention, but fortunately we came along.
I think you're like the legislature. You get a lot of attention, more than you'd like.
We'd like to say that we are a nonprofit corporation now. We were once part of the state of Oregon and Washington, housed with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality.
In 2001, we formed a nonprofit corporation. Our board of directors is a 33-member board with representatives from both states and the full geography of our study area, as well as the various interests that are have a stake or role in the river. So we have members who range from labor to environmental interests and a number of state and federal tribal agencies and local governments as well. Since 1995, the Oregon legislature has supported the estuary partnership at the $300,000 level per biennium. Your investment has been matched dollar for dollar by the state of Washington, and those funds are used to provide the match required by the federal government for funds we received through the Clean Water Act, Section 320. Our first task as a National Estuary Program was to develop a comprehensive conservation and management plan, a nice long bureaucratic sounding word, but it was to study the river, the lower river, and then develop a set of actions that would address the river. It culminated in this document, which many of you have seen. I'm proud to say, actually, that we did that work 3 years on time and under budget, and it was so unusual that EPA wanted to reward us with a cash bonus, but it had never happened before that a program finished not only on time but under budget. So it was a little struggle, but they did find a way, and we did receive extra federal money as a result of that effort. We've continued to try to be very strategic in how we implement the management plan to gain the most dollar for the investment that you, the federal government, and now many other partners are making. To that end, we worked very hard to define what we call our niche. There was a lot of concern as we were developing the plan and as we began implementing the plan that we were going to be another entity competing for already precious and few dollars and competing for the same types of restoration and education activities. So we made a commitment in 1999 that we would build, one of our first priorities is to build support of existing entities and to work to bring more resources to the local entities, what we call our collaborating partners, so that we're working in a more concerted way with one another to get a bigger impact for the dollars that we're all investing in habitat restoration, education, and the reduction of pollution. Because of the bi-state nature of our program, and as issues have evolved, including the listing of threatened and endangered species, federal agencies are recognizing the estuary partnership in a way that is different, frankly, from any of the other 28 programs. Because of the track record we've established in building and supporting local entities and in working in collaborative effort, NOAA Fisheries, for example, identified our management plan actions regarding habitat restoration in two of their biological opinions. The first one issued in 1999 on the impact of the proposed channel deepening project, and then again on their biological opinion of the federal hydropower system in 2000. That latter opinion incorporated our goal of restoring 10,000 acres of habitat by 2010. In addition, because of the bi-state focus of our program, the Northwest Power Planning Council has turned to us to serve as lead entity for developing subbasin plans for the lower Columbia and the Columbia Estuary subbasin planning processes. But let's get to the money, because that's where it sort of hits the road. Since 2000, the state of Oregon invested $280,000 in the estuary partnership. Some of it paid for on-the-ground programs, some of it went to our mini-grants program, and some of it provided stable source of funds for the estuary partnership to raise other funds. As I've mentioned, your immediate return on your investment is a dollar from the state of Washington. Those $2 provide an immediate return on your investment with funds from EPA through the National Estuary Program. In addition, the partnership developed a financial plan in 1999-2000 to help us identify what level of funding we were talking about to implement the 43 actions in our plan. we estimated that for the first 6 years we would need to raise $24 million to achieve the level of habitat restoration that we call for in our plan. The funds that the states and EPA have provided do provide our what we call our base operations, our staff and core support. We've been able to use those resources to leverage an additional $8 million in the last 2 years. $5 million of that is coming from Bonneville Power to implement on-the-ground habitat restoration work and some long-term monitoring. And we also worked successfully with Congress in 2000 to achieve an appropriation of $30 million through the Water Resources and Development Act to go to the Army Corps of Engineers to implement our management plan and the management plan of the Tillamook Estuary Program. And surprisingly, we actually received the first appropriation of $2 million in the 03 budget that Congress just passed.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Marriott, I want to just go back and highlight something that you just said about the $30 million. I want to make sure I heard it correctly. That was federal money that came to the Corps to implement your plan.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, that's correct.
To implement all aspects of your plan?
To implement the habitat restoration goals in our management plan and that of Tillamook Estuary Partnership.
And is that happening?
As Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, as I mentioned, we received the first $2 million appropriation in the 03 budget, which was passed by Congress in February of this year. The funds are on their way to the Corps, and we are working with the Army Corps. Our science work group and board is working with the Corps to identify specific projects for those for that $2 million.
Could you share with us a list of potential projects, or are they even that far along in identification?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, yes, I can share a list with you. Our science work group has been working for the last couple of years with a large number of partners, including the Columbia Land Trust, the Columbia River Estuary Study Task Force, a number of watershed councils, local governments, to develop a list of restoration sites that we feel meet criteria for restoring critical habitat functions and types. My one caveat about releasing a list is these are potential sites that meet habitat function and criteria. It doesn't necessarily mean that we've worked with or identified the relationship with some of the landowners that will need to happen before we can proceed with specific projects. What we want to do is have a large list of projects from which we can pull specific sites as funding becomes available. Our science work group and a group of about 100 scientists have developed criteria that projects must meet in order for them to be considered for funding through one of our sources.
Can I follow up?
Yes, I'm switching back and forth because I've got a whole bunch of questions. The first one is that $30 million came to the Corps, or came to you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, $30 million is the authorized level in the Water Resources Development Act. It's the level to which Congress could fund the Corps to implement our habitat projects pending availability of and designation of resources. We received an appropriation, actual money, of $2 million in this 03 budget year.
Okay, and your budget is structured to accept that money?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, the Water Resources Development Act, the $30 million authorization and the $2 million appropriation goes to the Army Corps of Engineers, and they are called for in the legislation to work with us to identify projects consistent with our management plan for habitat restoration.
I'm sorry to just beat this to death, but I'm finally getting it. Now, one other thing with your indulgence, Mr. Chair. When you and the Corps set about identifying these projects, and the Corps perhaps has other initiatives that make lower river restoration and estuary maintenance more difficult, how do you work those out? Because I know that some of the Corps' proposals on the lower river have been quite controversial, and in the eyes of some scientists and certainly some citizens, contravene good habitat maintenance or restoration. What's your venue for working those out when they're one of your principal funders?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson. That goes to the very, very key issue for us. And when we were working with American Rivers and the Corps on this authorization, through some very long and painful negotiations with various parties, we got an agreement from the Corps and the ports that the funds that were that become available through the Water Resources Development Act, Section 536, it's called, are to be used for restoration and cannot be used for mitigation or restoration of any project that would cause further degradation. So we were separating. We worked hard to get a separation of essentially pots of money that the Corps administers for various related activities. So the funds that come through the Water Resources Development Act, Section 536, cannot be used for any restoration project or mitigation work that's associated with an existing or proposed project, such as the channel deepening. There's a complete bifurcation. We worked pretty long and hard, and in fact did not have the support of many of our partners in the lower end of the river until we were able to secure that distinction of funds, and the Corps is very committed to keeping those distinctions for us. And in fact, it was important to the congressional delegation as well, and Congressman Blumenauer stipulated in his letter to the Appropriations Committee that that distinction be carried forward in the notes to the bill.
Can you identify the boundaries of the governor?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We work from Bonneville Dam to the Pacific Ocean. It's 146 river miles, and we work on both sides of the river, Oregon and Washington. And we go up the tributaries to the tidally influenced waters. So on the Willamette, for example, we go up to Oregon City.
But I thought I heard you say you're doing a project in Tillamook County.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Let me clarify that. Tillamook also has a national estuary program there, and they were named in the Water Resources Development Act as one of the potential recipients for the Corps' restoration monies. Thank you.
But that's not through your organization then?
Mr. Chairman, no. They're a separate national estuary program.
Okay. Thank you.
In addition to the $8 million we've leveraged for habitat on the ground, habitat restoration and monitoring, we've also raised an additional $1 million for our education programs and for two stormwater management programs, one with the City of Oregon City and one with Longview, Washington. They were looking for some assistance, financial and otherwise, to put in place stormwater management programs to help them meet the EPA non-point elimination discharge programs phase two requirements. I think probably the most important thing for me as I look at what the estuary program is asking and what where we've been is what have we been able to achieve with the resources that you've provided. We have, in addition to the fundraising that we've done on the habitat restoration side, we've instituted an education program, Kids for the Columbia, that actually has been in response to a growing need from educators in our public schools to help them replace some of the core requirements that are being lost as their budgets are reduced. We've reached 10,000 students in classroom and on-river programs since February of 2001. We're currently working with 600 children a week in those programs. We also are holding held workshops for teachers to help them develop their curriculum with less reliance on our in the field work with them. As I've mentioned the achievements we've made on the fundraising side. We also are part of the Association of National Estuary Programs, and as such, we've been successful in increasing by 25% the EPA contribution to the National Estuary Program through our work with Congress. We have a very significant volunteer program logging over 8,000 hours of volunteer time, planting over 2,000 trees in a couple of wildlife refuges in our study area. We instituted a two-day volunteer monitoring event last year with about 800 people sampling about 230 sites. This is the first time there's been any considered effort at monitoring on the main stem. There's very little technical monitoring that is done on the main stem. In fact, there are only four sites that are monitored by any of the state or federal agencies. We are pleased that part of the money we're receiving from Bonneville Power, about $1.6 million, will help us implement a long-term monitoring program so we can actually evaluate trends and have some basis to determine whether what we're doing and a number of what our partners are doing are actually achieving the results that we are all intending. We also invested funds in flying the lower 146 river miles with high-resolution imagery to map for the first time all of the habitat, inventory it, and assess it. It's from that data that our collaborating partners are developing the habitat criteria, and also we're working to develop a habitat restoration strategy, which is one of the first times that we're all working together, again, to implement this, strategically implement this list of potential sites. We also do other things that are even more fun. We're working with a large group of people, about 80 people, developing a water trail that will follow the last leg of the Lewis and Clark journey from Bonneville down to the mouth of the river. That I have a number of pieces of information I'll leave with you about, as one of them is our first brochure, has a great map. This is going to be a series of maps. We're dividing the lower 146 river miles into 7 20-mile segments, and we'll be developing maps that will market the area, both its history and its environment, but also its economy. So there'll be lists of all the bed and breakfasts in that area, local businesses. So when you're traveling along by kayak or canoe, you can pull out, and if you don't want to camp at the sites that we've restored, you can go up and enjoy one of the local businesses. What is at risk if our funding from the state of Oregon is jeopardized or reduced, of course, is the $5 million that we're receiving from Bonneville Power, the $2 million we're receiving from Congress for habitat restoration. We won't be able to meet the obligations we have to EPA under the National Estuary Program. And we will not be able to continue our water trail efforts and our education programs. And I think more significantly, we won't have the staffing resources to leverage the dollar values that we've been able to realize over the last couple of years. Our goals for 2003-2005 with investment of your funds are to continue our education programs. We estimate that in 1 year we will be working with about 22,000 children now because of the increased demand from educators. We will continue to work to realize additional resources for habitat restoration work for our partners. And I would like to say that the funds that we raise, the $5 million we've raised for habitat restoration work, will be done by our partners. The Estuary Partnership does not envision that it will be out there doing the restoration, but that we will grant these funds to local entities like Columbia Land Trust, the Columbia River Estuary Study Task Force, and local watershed councils for them to continue their habitat restoration work. We will complete the sub-basin plans with the Northwest Power Planning Council in the next year. We will continue the data collection through the volunteer monitoring program, and with the funds from Bonneville, we will institute the first phases of toxic water quality monitoring in a more scientific way. I think I'll stop there and take questions that you might have of me and any comments that you might have about the Estuary Partnership.
Thank you. Questions of the committee? Representative Johnson.
This is the first, thank you, Mr. Chair, the first time that this occurred to me when I saw this lovely little map. Paul Donhefner from the Marine Board made another presentation, and they've done a lovely map to encourage Lewis and Clark visitors. One of the things that Mr. Don Heffner made a particular point of talking about, and I haven't read this in its entirety, is to make sure that our visitors are aware of the fact that as placid and tranquil as you make the Columbia appear in these pictures, that blowing up your G.I. Joe's canoe, and I mean your inflatable, and throwing it into the Columbia is probably not the most prudent thing to do. How are you going to adequately warn people that the Columbia is not a lake? This is a beautiful brochure, but this is a dangerous invitation to the uninitiated.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, those are excellent points. And in fact, before we actually pursued this project to the level that we have, we have worked very hard and continue to work hard with the ports and the Coast Guard. So the maps that we produce of the individual segments will have a significant amount of safety information about the channel, the shipping lanes, the tides, currents. I think all of us are very concerned about the safety. We're also concerned about making sure that the impact is low impact, that we want to encourage people to get to the river and to use and enjoy the river, but we also want to make sure they do it in a way that doesn't further degrade the habitat that we have there and the species that exist there.
Thank you.
Safety on the water.
Any other questions? Good. Comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Huntington. We've got about 25 minutes left.
Yeah, that's good. We're going to get the show somebody out of there.
It'll be after the ship runs over.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to direct your attention back from the LCREP section of the binder to the page 54 in section 2. This is the beginning of the governor's balanced budget packages that pertain to the OEB grant program.
Representative Johnson?
Before we leave the LCREP, and Jeff, I'm sure you can answer this, the proposal right now is that the LCREP funding be switched totally to ballot measure 66 money. Is that not correct?
Chair Messily, Representative Johnson, the governor's revised budget does eliminate all general fund and move the operations to measure 66 operational money.
Thank you.
On page 54, you'll see that we have essential packages that Ms. Pearson's here to discuss, and we're happy to talk about them to the extent the committee has questions. The only thing I will point out is that policy package 330 talks about the amount in the governor's balanced budget, the funds that would be allocated to OEB's restoration grant program, being on the order of just a little over $23 million in the governor's balanced budget. At the chair's direction yesterday, I attempted, and I'll try to give you a gross comparison between, as I go through these different fund sources, between the governor's balanced budget, the co-chair proposal that's pending, and the governor's revised budget, and essentially for our capital grant program. The three packages that are out on the table is the governor's balanced budget is in the order of that $23 million for the capital grant program, a total of 24.9 if you include some adjustments that Ms. Pearson can talk to you about in order to balance out the capital restrictions that come on the money. The co-chair budget looks at a grant program, capital grant program for our restoration grant process at about $19 million. And the governor's revised budget is between $24 and $27 million, depending on whether or not the fish screen program for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, which has been passed through our grant program in past years, continues to be passed through the grant program or is done as a direct revenue transfer. So the governor's revised budget is very similar to the governor's balanced budget, with that one question mark that I just don't know the answer to, and it probably hasn't been worked out yet. And the co-chair budget is on the order of $19 million because of fund shifting that is proposed as part of that budget. And that, with that, I don't have anything else to offer to you on the capital grant funds packages that are in the presentation booklet or our budget.
Questions? Comments?
comment? Mr. Chair,
Representative Martin.
If I could, with your kind permission, it would be interesting to me to see over the time that Measure 66 has been in force, how much of the money has been going to grants, and then when we added the federal money to it, how much of that is going to grants. I'm real curious over the evolution of the granting program, kind of charted by biennium, how much we've been able to put into the granting program. Is that in here anywhere?
Chair Mesley, Representative Morgan, I think Global Page 7 does a pretty fair job of that, although you probably wouldn't have caught it because we didn't list it by one source. But if you look, well, actually, we don't break out the capital and the non-capital grants in that, and so that looks at the grant program, and you can track grant funds awarded. In the 99-01 biennium was $33.7 million, and the 01-03 was $36.7 million. There's some mixture, though, between capital Measure 66 on-the-ground project funds in that and the federal funds that have been supporting non-capital projects. And I will come tomorrow with a breakout of that so you can see it by fund source for since I hope we can do it, and I think we can do it back to 99-01. 0103, and then what's proposed for 0305.
Well, and I would feel very guilty if I found out you stayed up all night doing that too. So,
Representative Morgan, it's readily attainable. We've got the ability to move these figures around in a lot of different ways, and so that should be fairly simple for us to
Thank
take
you.
Care of.
Any other questions, comments? Thank you.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I wanted to take a quick look at something. Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I can tell you that the spreadsheet that our board uses that was on page 44 does break things out by fund source, and it doesn't go back any further than the 2001, the current biennium, 0103. But if you look at the first cell on the left-hand page, that's capital Measure 66 money. We started out the biennium with an allotment of $30.2 million. Now, from that, we took the ODFW fish screen program for a $4 million allotment. But we have basically drawn that fund source down to less than $1 million. And so using that cell, you could say that we have put between $25 and $26 million on the ground as part of the OEB grant program using Measure 66 capital money in the 2001-2003 biennium. And we should be able to pull the 99-01 report very easily when we get back to the office. You can, tracking down that left column, then look at the at money that was available that was unspent from the 99 capital Measure 66 money that we started out the biennium with. We had $2.5 million, and we used that for grants this biennium. The third cell down on the left column was the operating lottery water, the Measure 66 operational money that was provided to OWEB to use for grants in the 0103 biennium. And that was $2.4 million, which was for watershed council support exclusively. And the remainder of our grant program in the 0103 biennium then came from all of the different federal fund grants you see working down the page. And that was, I can tell you that we operated with a $6 million budget for grants that went to watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts and folks that applied through our competitive process for projects that were not qualifying as capital projects. So we ran a $6 million non-capital grant program in the 0103 biennium, which we then supplemented when more federal funds became available for special calls. Like I mentioned yesterday, $1.5 million for technical assistance grants. And we also put some money into restoration from fires in the last season. And so we did those supplementing as the federal funds were available. The rest of the federal fund money was used for agency delivery of products from agencies associated with the Oregon Plan, either through fund shifting or direct memorandums of agreement between OWEB and the agency for things like fish surveys and monitoring data and things like that. So that gives you a sense of it. We'll come back with some clear numbers tomorrow. If there are no questions, then again on the Measure 66 capital grant funds, Global page 55 identifies the Measure 66 operational funds, and it's the overview of the money that we have in the governor's balanced budget. There are three discrete allocations of operational funds in the governor's balanced budget, $2.4 million to be used for watershed council support grants, and then the Measure 66 monies that are targeted for IMST support and that, as part of their budget, and then the Lower Columbia River Estuary support. Again, the beginning point for the governor's balanced budget has general fund money in the Lower Columbia River Estuary program. In terms of Measure 66 grant program dollars, and again, this is separate from my agency operational budget, the governor's balanced budget has the amounts you see there. The co-chair budget has no Measure 66 money identified for watershed council support, no Measure 66 money identified for the IMST, and has the entire balance for the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program on Measure 66 operational funds. The governor's revised budget, as it's currently constructed, has the full allocation for the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program on Measure 66, just as the co-chair budget does, has zero Measure 66 dollars for the IMST, and is doing essentially the same thing, contemplating a fund shift of federal funds to support the IMST, and has $2.4 million in Measure 66 operational money for Watershed Council support. So that's a quick overview. Okay, and there may be, I may be wrong on the exact numbers for the Lower Columbia, the co-chair budget for the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program. Ms. Pearson's telling me that that may actually be reduced at some increment. We have Measure 66 carry forward, and you're welcome to ask questions about the essential packages that are there. And we are looking for a continuation of the $2.4 million in Measure 66 operations for the core support for watershed councils. We operate a council support grant program on a $4.1 million budget. So for the last two biennia, there's been a federal fund supplementation of the 2.4. And we are in the process, as I mentioned earlier, responding toward moving the council support grant program to a merit-based program, and have accomplished the first big step of that. The board has done a tentative allocation of council support grants for the next 2 years on a $4.1 million budget assumption, pending completion of the agency's budget and the adoption of the agency's budget. And we do that every 2 years with a grant cycle that starts with that coincides with the biennium. So council support grants all end on June 30, 2003, and the new grant cycle is from July through June of 2005.
Jeff, there's a lot of interest, I think, at least some interest in the building of how your funding programs coordinate with the soil and water districts and how the functions of the council coordinate and the use of technical assistance and that technical assistance count goes directly to the watershed councils or to soil and water districts and partly funded by NRCS and that whole basket. How does your budget reflect that kind of coordination?
Chair Mesley, while I'm
answering,
it's a big question. While I'm answering it, or I'll take a crack at it, and maybe we can bite this one off in small pieces. I'm going to ask to pass out two handouts to you regarding watershed council support that might help on this too. And the first one is just a thumbnail sketch of how we support watershed councils starting in the 03-05 biennium, and exactly what I mean by a merit-based process that we've started. And the other is a letter I've written to county commissioners in the state regarding grant conditions that I'm contemplating with my board, putting on council support grants that look for better ties between watershed councils and county commissions than is formalized now, although in many cases exist currently. Direct response to your question is that the budgets for the funds, the delivery of funds from the state budget to watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts has been severed for a number of biennia ever since Measure 66 was in place, and I do not administer basic support funding to soil and water conservation districts. There's a direct revenue transfer that goes to the Department of Agriculture, who sets the criteria and the conditions for funding soil and water conservation districts. And they use a very different approach than the current approach that OWEB is using for watershed councils, and literally divide the amount of money that's available from Measure 66 by county in equal shares, and then that is passed on to districts depending on how many districts are in a particular county. And then there are a number of other funding sources that Department of Ag passes through to soil and water conservation districts that are not Measure 66 and that are administered through the Department of Agriculture. When OWEB considers council support grants, and did consider council support grants this spring, we applied four funding principles without regard to prior support levels that a council had seen. And this was the first time we'd moved away to stop looking at what they had received in the past and looked at the application and the merits of the application and the basis for their funding request. We looked at the success of the council as an organization, including the community involvement. We looked at the strength of their work plans and their work priorities. We looked at whether they had accomplished in the last 2 years what they promised us they would accomplish and where they were headed to in the next 2 years relative to the complexity and the issues that were facing them in the watershed. And then we applied some funding principles that were overlays on that merit consideration, including no staffing increases for any of the grantees and limiting council funding for new councils and looking very hard at creating disincentives for council splintering and begin to move them toward having more an umbrella council approach, with looking for opportunities to consolidate staffing to serve more than one council. And
excuse me, Jeff. Representative Morgan has a question.
Well, and this will change gears somewhat, Mr. Chair, so if you don't want to go there, just let me know. I'm real curious about what the discussion is in the federal arena about what kind of funding levels we can expect for federal funds in 03 and 04 and 05.
Chair Mesley, Representative Morgan, the 03 allocation for the state of Oregon out of the Pacific Coastal Salmon Fund. Excuse me, I'm going to make sure I'm correct. We are talking in this budget cycle of receiving limitation to accept the federal fiscal year 02 allocation, and there's $12 million remaining that has been unspent and uncommitted, and that is part of the governor's balanced budget. Then the Congress did just finish work in the last 2 months since the governor's balanced budget was prepared, actually, and it's not reflected in this binder, but Congress appropriated $14 million in federal fiscal year 03 to come to the state. Out of that $14 million, there were earmarks that bring the net amount that's unencumbered, essentially, to about $10 million. So there's about $22 million in federal money that has been allocated to come to the state of Oregon that is unencumbered and uncommitted by OWEB or by any process that we've gone through that we would need expenditure limitation. The President's budget has in it an amount that is roughly equal to the $14 million that we received in the 03 allocation. The 04 allocation, the President's budget anyway, has about the same amount proposed for the four states and the tribes. That's going through an appropriation process right now, and to be honest, the predictability of that process is right now in Washington, D.C., I'm hearing from a lot of folks is on the same order of magnitude that we've got in this building, too. It's just really topsy-turvy, and we don't know where that will go, but that's the current status.
Thank you.
Chair Mesley, going back to your question just for a minute, my sense is, and in talking to folks, that we have districts and councils working across the state in partnership and working in a collaborative way, that they're actually being pretty strategic in most instances. And frankly, I think in the vast majority of cases, we have let the local delivery mechanisms sort through how to function in parallel and in tandem, so that they're taking into account each other. And particularly on the east side of the state, they work hand in glove and very strategically. There are places where, because of local politics, local personalities, or just circumstances, that they bump into each other, and they have to work out differences, or they have to work out how to be more strategic in the way that they're interacting with projects. But that is the minority of instances, in my view, and from what I'm seeing. As we hear about those, my staff works very hard to help sort through issues and help the local groups function as efficiently as they can. I work to the best I'm able and routinely with the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts and have a good working relationship with their executive director, and we work in tandem and we team hot spots if there's a problem. And I would hope if he were sitting here, he would agree that there is that is well within our capacity to resolve ongoing flashpoints, so that those groups are able to get over the hump and keep moving forward. Having said that, I think that what is on deck for the Department of Agriculture and the Watershed Enhancement Board in the next biennium is, once we see what the landscape looks like for funding these groups and what the grant program looks like that they are going to be seeking project money from, is that we seek out a way to have a clearer understanding of the roles that are agreed to in various areas, and so where it's been on a handshake before, maybe we encourage folks to actually formalize it and work through how they're going to interact with each other and how they're going to make sure they're as strategic as they can be and how they're going to avoid bumping into each other in their priorities. And I think that everyone agrees that we have to streamline and work toward helping folks do that by giving them incentives instead of, at least in my opinion, instead of telling them what the structure will be that they have to fit into. Because frankly, the one sure thing I know after 3 years at this agency is that councils in the South Coast or in the Willamette Basin look a lot different than councils in the Deschutes or in the Oahe, and they function on a different set of norms, and they reflect their community differently, and their relationship with the district is therefore different. And so I'm not sure how to put a template on it, but I am certain that there are ways to move us toward that. And the letter I wrote to the county commission is at least my intent to start that process. And I'm quite certain that the OACD board and the Department of Agriculture are going to be very receptive to working on that with us.
And part of it, where I was coming from and asking the question, Jeff, was we as a budget committee are looking at general funds, Development Measure 66 funds, and federal funds, how we're going to fund this whole function and pull it together. And I don't know if you want to comment on that right now, but as we get to work session, we will have a good discussion and figure out how we can fund this and benefit the state the most.
And Chair Mesley, I would like to have that discussion in work session. I would like to comment now that, as you saw in my agency prioritization, I think that the best investment in natural resources that this state accrues on a biennial basis is the money we put into the districts and the councils to work with private landowners to take on these voluntary restoration activities. We're leveraging money in ways that agency programs don't ordinarily do. And we're leveraging goodwill and significant results, outcomes, both immediate outcomes and long-term outcomes, both on the ground and in the relationship between government and citizens of the state, in a way that is very real. And it's, I think, fueled by the investment we make in the capacity of councils and districts to function. And it's not always the cleanest organizational chart, but it is, I think, a big step forward from where we were many years ago before we started engaging watershed councils. I was talking to a rancher last night, called me at home about whether or not he should drive 6 hours to get here on Thursday to talk to y'all, and as I was telling him that was an awful big commitment, he was saying, you know, there are a lot of issues and a lot of problems out here, and I'm not sure I like government a whole lot right now, but I can tell you that in my area it's a whole lot better now than it was before my watershed council was working, because that watershed council has managed to bring different agencies to the table to talk to me and to other ranchers in this community in a way that they didn't before. And I frankly don't think we have an Oregon plan if we don't have a strong, robust support system for watershed councils. And again, having said that, there is much work that we can do to kind of streamline the tandem efforts between districts and councils. But I really don't see duplication on an order of magnitude that says that there's budget efficiencies to be accomplished by reducing council support or moving it. And that would be a real priority for my program goals for the next biennium, is to help that infrastructure stay in place and functioning, and then move forward with it, as opposed to try and work through budget reductions to it.
We're really out of time. We got about a minute, but I want to, just before we close down, are there any questions of committee members or comments before we depart? Any comment you want to make, Mr. Siebert, before we...
Nope.
Thank you very much. With that, we'll close the public hearing and adjourn the committee meeting.